It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It was a hot day on May 29th in Randallstown, Maryland. 19-year-old Jordan McNair, an offensive lineman for the Maryland Terrapins, was having trouble catching his breath after doing sprints during practice. He started having a seizure, according to reporting from ESPN. By the time he got to the hospital, his body temperature had reached 106 degrees. He died 2 weeks later. Washington Post sports writer Sally Jenkins pulled no punches when she wrote about McNair's death. She called out college football culture as prehistoric and said that the deranged college coaching mentality must stop. Sally Jenkins is with us this morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, prehistoric coaches, deranged coaching mentality, unhinged dictators. You're pretty angry about this, aren't you?
Well, I mean, a 19-year-old is dead.
Right. You wrote the word kill, and you specifically said that college football coaches in the culture of college football is killing their players. Talk to me about that.
Well, if you look at the NFL lost a player named Corey Stringer back in 2001, and it did what any organization should do. It investigated the causes of his death from heat stroke exhaustion on the field, and they haven't had a death similar since. They put in some very common sense procedures. Heat stroke is manageable with some ice and a thermometer. There's absolutely no excuse in this day and age to lose an athlete in those circumstances. So, you know, the University of Maryland was operating in a really crude and an unacceptable way in driving these players through sprints in the heat without some basic precautions. Not only has the NFL not had a death this way since 2001, but the NCAA college football community exceeds the deaths in high school football, where you would assume, first of all, the population is much larger and the coaches are much less exposed to the most modern sports science and basic medical precautions. And so the NCAA has a problem that it doesn't exist at any other level of football. And the reason it exists is because college coaches, as we've seen, particularly at Ohio State right now with Urban Meyer, college coaches are simply unaccountable. No college president and no board of trustees has proven that they can get a grip on these authoritarian tyrants who run their programs in any way that they want to and absolutely answer to nobody.
We are talking to Sally Jenkins about deaths in college football in NCAA after the death of Jordan McNair, who suffered heat stroke during practice on May 29th. We're taking your calls on this. Have you ever been through a practice that you barely got through? Have you suffered heat stroke? What do you think about coaches who run their players almost to death or to death in some cases? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. I want to go back to Jordan McNair for a moment. What happened to him?
Well, he was running a series of 110-yard sprints, and he essentially began to stagger, and his head rolled back, and a Maryland athletic trainer started screaming, "Drag his ass across the field." He obviously demonstrated that he was in serious physical distress, and yet nobody apparently took his temperature, paused the workout, iced him down, and did the things that, you know, heat stroke is 100% survivable with some basic precautions and operations. You know, when a young man or a young woman starts to show that sort of distress, you immediately check their core temperature and ice them down. If any of that had been done, he would be alive. There's no question about it. Maryland has taken responsibility for that. But I think what's more important is the attitude. You know, the heat did not kill Jordan McNair. What killed Jordan McNair was an overheated attitude on the part of coaching staffs that thought such a workout was helpful in the first place. You know, 27 football players have died in conditioning drills since 2001, which is the last time the NFL lost a player. Mm-hmm. Like this. I mean, that is a really startling statistic, and it tells you what sort of crude knuckle-dragging mentality we're dealing with here in college. It's been 17 years since the NFL learned better, and yet college coaches have not.
So do college coaches, are you saying the college coaches see this as weakness?
I think there's a mentality and an attitude that really needs to be curbed. They see themselves as the makers of men. They're taking high school players and quote, toughening them up. And I think that they are doing so in a very unsophisticated way. The most athletic trainers would tell you, I mean, there was a wonderful piece that I quoted in my column from a University of Oklahoma athletic trainer named Scott Anderson. He calls these sorts of workouts not only outdated, but he says they represent a, quote, irrational intensity. And I think that's exactly what it is. Sports science now, they understand that you don't drive a young man to the brink of organ failure to toughen him up. You create very sport-specific, efficient workouts that build his strength and build his stamina and build his endurance in specific, appropriate, task-oriented ways. Jordan McNair was an offensive lineman, and he wasn't going to have to run any 110-yard sprint
right.
ever in football. It was a nonsensical workout in the first place that wasn't developing anything that was useful for his role in football. So it was a completely pointless exercise in the first place. One of the things that's of real concern to athletic trainers and medical personnel is that a lot of times college coaches use these workouts as punishment, or they use them to drive players out of the program so they can free up the scholarship. They want to make it so miserable for a young man that he will leave or he will quit. I don't know what the goal was in Jordan McNair's case, but training him for his football-specific task was not the point.
So ESPN has reported that there was a culture of abuse from coaches at Maryland, particularly strength and conditioning coach Rick Court, who was in charge of the practice on May 29th. According to ESPN, extreme verbal abuse of players occurs often. Players are routinely the targets of obscenity-laced epithets meant to mock their masculinity when they're unable to complete a workout or weight lift, for example. One player was belittled verbally after passing out during a drill. So this coach has actually had people pass out before. Players have been forced to eat to the point of vomiting. Who is supposed to oversee this?
Well, the head coach, DJ Durkin, who specifically hired Rick Court and said, you know, he was the most vital part of the staff that I wanted to put together. We work hand in glove. We think exactly alike on all of these issues. So Rick Court is simply an expression of the head coach, DJ Durkin, who sets the culture and controls the culture. Now, DJ Durkin also has quite a few supporters on the team. It's unclear to me whether he, in fact, was a bully or created a toxic culture. That's for the University of Maryland's investigative committee to discern from interviewing players and staff. But, you know, we have some very basic evidence in front of us. We have the dead body of a 19-year-old boy. Mm. So at a minimum, you can say that DJ Durkin and his staff were profoundly uninformed, profoundly reckless, and profoundly ignorant. I mean, those things we can say for sure, and profoundly responsible for this.
DJ Durkin has not spent his entire career at Maryland. Has this kind of thing happened at the other schools he was at?
You know, he's been everywhere. He's been at Stanford, Michigan, Notre Dame, Florida. He is not an outlier in NCAA Division I college football. Mm. He is NCAA football. There are a lot of other men like him in college football. His mentality is not an outlying mentality. That's the problem here, is that DJ Durkin is not an isolated instance. He happens to have gone too far and caused a death. But as I say, there have been 27 other deaths since 2001, and there have been 40 deaths total in the NCAA across all sports in conditioning drills. Now, again, we're talking conditioning, quote, conditioning. We're not even talking about games.
Right.
We're not talking about the trauma of an on-field collision in competition. We're talking about practices and drills here. It's insane.
We are talking to Sally Jenkins about the death of Jordan McNair and over conditioning, pushing people to the brink. I want to know the Maryland administration. What do they say about this? Is Rick Court still employed, and is DJ Durkin's job on the line?
DJ Durkin is on administrative leave. Mm. He is the subject of two ongoing investigations, one into how Maryland handled Jordan McNair once he appeared to be in distress during this drill, and then the second is a larger investigation basically looking at the, quote, culture of D.J. Durkin's program to discern if it's toxic or not.
And Rick Court?
And Rick Court is gone. He was out. He's out, as well he should have been. And so was a trainer who basically said drag his ass across the field.
And from what I understand, there was time that went by when they first started seeing Jordan McNair. Yes, go ahead.
That's a complicated question, and that's a subject of the investigation. There are some conflicting reports that, according to Jordan McNair's family, an hour elapsed before ambulances were called and he was airlifted to the hospital. And by the time he got to the hospital, his body temperature was 106. Presumably, his body temperature had actually come down by the time they got him to the hospital.
Wow.
So there's some question. Now, the University of Maryland has said that there's some dispute about those facts, actually. And so we'll see what the outcome of the investigation is. But according to the Jordan McNair family attorney, something close to an hour elapsed between the signs of distress and the actual arrival at the hospital.
So you
just need to know what happened in that hour. And obviously what didn't happen was he was not iced down, and presumably his temperature was not taken.
We are talking to Sally Jenkins about the death of offensive lineman Jordan McNair. He was in a Maryland Terrapins practice when he had a seizure and died 2 weeks later. We're taking your calls on this. What do you think of the culture of college football and the culture in NCAA athletics in general? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org. Or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're going to be back with more with Sally Jenkins in a moment. It's The Morning Show.
Taking a look at the WPR weather forecast for today. Increasing clouds with rain possibly heavy at times. There's also a chance of isolated thunderstorms, highs in the 70s. Saturday, cloudy skies, a good chance of rain and thunderstorms, especially in the morning. Some heavy rain is possible, highs from the mid-70s to low 80s. Sunday, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and storms in the south and highs from the mid-70s to low 80s. More rain possible on Labor Day.
Coming up at 8, the rains in Wisconsin won't stop, and neither will the floods. Baraboo is the latest area to deal with sandbagging and overflowing rivers. We're going to get an update in about 12 minutes on The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The death in June of Maryland Terrapins offensive lineman Jordan McNair has prompted investigations by sports journalists and others and a scathing rebuke of college football's toxic culture by Washington Post sports columnist Sally Jenkins. We are talking to Sally Jenkins for the rest of this hour, and we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Sally, I want to get into this. You talked about the NFL, which hasn't had a death since Corey Stringer, who played for the Minnesota Vikings, died in 2001. They changed their procedures, and they've been using more sports science. Talk to me about what that sports science is.
Well, it's essentially all about efficiency. You know, how do you train for your specific sport and your specific task in your sport? So, for instance, the rest to work ratio in football is about 1 to 8. So one measure of work is followed by about 8 beats of rest. So if you're watching an NFL game, you know, you can tell that the players have very short bursts of activity, and then there's quite a bit of time for play calling and then lining up for the next job that they perform on the field. And so what you do in sports science, what they try to do is they optimize that sort of thing in training to prepare players for what their actual job is going to be. Just like NASA astronauts, you know, you don't, when you're going to do a spacewalk, it's a bit similar to cross-country skiing. An astronaut in space is going to be expending a certain amount of energy, but he's also going to be required to perform tasks that are really, really, really precise. So how do you train for that? Well, it's the same in sports science. And so what they try to do is design workouts that optimize your body's ability to perform those tasks on demand. And it's called peaking. It's called recovery. You know, all of those things really matter, and they've gotten really great at it. Calibration is one of the real marvels of calibrating a human body. Is one of the great marvels of athletics these days.
Okay, so college coaches are on campuses where these things, the science is being perfected. One would think, how come they're not practicing this kind of specific conditioning science?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, Maryland prides itself on being one of the great research universities. They advertise that about themselves all the time. The obstacle here is, again, these fiefdoms, the control that is exercised by college head coaches who are signed to these multimillion-dollar contracts and who really only answer to a small handful of incredibly wealthy alum who are the real bosses of athletic departments. And they're protected and sheltered by these wealthy alum. In fact, a bunch of them just wrote a letter to the University of Maryland yesterday defending DJ Durkin. And so it's very difficult for anyone to exercise any real oversight over the program. University presidents, you know, I think fear their wealthiest donors.
Okay, so we've got some callers here I want to get to. But first I want to ask you this question. Is this the time to tackle unions? It strikes me that the NFL was able to make change because its players have power. Should college players have that kind of power too?
Well, that's the big question. They certainly don't have any rights. And the reason I use the word kill is because I don't know what else you call it when a tyrant forces captive young men to run themselves to death. And that is the basic setup. That is the power dynamic in college football today.
We are taking your calls here for Sally Jenkins. We've got Jean from Shawna. Jean, welcome to the program.
Hello. I want to say that my father was a coach. My brother was a coach. I'm now 74 years old. I lived through it. But it's ingrained in them that you do not show hurt. You fight through it. For instance, I'm going to give a couple examples. One of them is I'm a little girl. My hand is in the car door, stuck in the car door. I mean, it's in the car door. And I was taught, I mean, you do not cry, you do not show anything, and you stand there, take a deep breath, and you speak respectfully and look decently, and then they will open the car door at a given time and just walk away.
Wow.
Now, yeah, wow. Okay. On two separate occasions, I was unconscious. I'm laying there. And I'm trying to, this is, I was maybe 12 or 13. I'm trying to sit, I keep coming to, because I've been knocked unconscious a lot of times by this time. And I'm go back down, and I hear this voice saying, there's this man who I don't know, who saw me, who saw the accident, which wasn't an accident, who said, you have to call an ambulance, to my father. You have to call an ambulance. You have to call an ambulance. She's been unconscious too long. And my father just said, oh, that's enough. Get up. And I'm laying there, and he said, I said, get up. And I got up, and we walked all the way back to the car, which was across a field. And that is the way I was raised, but that's what they believe.
Yeah.
They believe you do not cry. They believe you fight through it. They believe that. And they believe everybody should learn that.
Jean, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. And that was an awesome story that you shared. Thank you for that. I'm going to get to Robin from Baraboo. Robin, welcome to the program.
Hi. I had a daughter who was on a crew team rowing in a California State University campus. And she called me distressed one day on her way to training and said, my back is hurting, and I don't think I should do this training workout. And I said, well, just tell the coach you're not able to do it. And she said, no, we'll be ostracized. We won't get to have our spot in the boat for the next race. I mean, it was very much like the woman who was just on, saying that you can't show any sign of weakness, or if you say there's an ache or pain, you're making it up and just being lazy. So she went ahead and did the workout and called me about 30 minutes later and crying and said, God, I'm still upset about it. She said, my back is hurt. I have to go to the hospital. She's now 30 years old, and she still has a serious injury to her back that props up from time to time. I didn't even know I was emotional about it, but it infuriates me to hear about this. And the culture, she felt like she couldn't say no, or she was going to be ostracized by the other rowers and also punished by the coach.
Robin, thank you for that. Sally Jenkins, it's not just college football. There is a mentality that borders on abusive in college sports in general.
Well, these are just heartrending, heartbreaking stories, and they also make you just absolutely furious because it's the needlessness of it. It's not smart. It's not sophisticated coaching. I mean, I was very lucky to write 3 books with Pat Summitt. I mean, there's never been a greater coach in any area. And, I watched her train her athletes quite a lot. I was around a great deal. And Pat always left this to the experts, the strength coaches and the athletic trainers. Her most trusted staff member was a wonderful athletic medical trainer named Jenny Moshak, who she just swore by. And if Jenny told her to back off, she backed off. She never used conditioning as punishment. She used it as a stamina and fitness builder appropriately for basketball. She used it to build some mental toughness. But when there was a disciplinary problem, she didn't drag a kid out and run them into a coma. She benched them. I mean, the bench was always the biggest punishment for her.
Mm-hmm.
Early in her career, she actually, I take it back, she actually did use running as some punishment early in her career, but she quickly learned better. She herself had blown her knee and had physical problems. She herself had been a player, and she was always looking to maximize their stamina and yet preserve their bodies. I mean, that's what's so stupid about all of this, what does it help a coach if they're actually breaking down their players rather than building them up? So backward about all of this.
We have been talking to Sally Jenkins. She is an award-winning sports columnist for The Washington Post. Her recent piece is titled Prehistoric College Football Coaches Are Killing Players. It's past time to stop them. Sally, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And thank you to our callers. Those 2 stories were heartbreaking, and I appreciate you calling and sharing them. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.